Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is the winner of the Kohan Foundation Award for 2015 for his service to the Jewish people, Rabbi Abraham Cooper, Associate Dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center and the Museum of Tolerance. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Purim is coming up soon, now just a week away from all the shows and carnivals and 10 days from the actual festival of the Megillah, the Book of Esther. While Purim is the silliest Jewish holiday and in many ways the most fun, it's often neglected by adults as, oh, just a kid's festival. That's a shame, because the truth is that we need our religious life to be both serious and meaningful and fun, if not always at the same time. Judaism has always understood this, and it's incorporated into our annual calendar both the overwhelming seriousness of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and the ridiculous frivolity of Purim, the Feast of Esther. And in a subtle way, we've chosen to make them polar opposites, twin festivals almost exactly 6 months apart, half a year, with completely reversed traditions and practices. The parallels, or rather the reversals, are fascinating. Beginning with their placement on the calendar, they include food, dress, music, and seriousness. On Yom Kippur, we fast. On Purim, we feast. On Yom Kippur, we are to be deeply serious, while on Purim, we are to revel and be as silly as possible. On Yom Kippur, we dress in all white, while in Purim, we dress in the brightest costumes of every color and construction. On Yom Kippur, we pray all day, while on Purim, we perform plays and parodies, have carnivals and celebrations, and play games of chance. On Yom Kippur, we are not to drink at all, not even water. On Purim, we're commanded to drink alcohol, ad delo yada, until we can't tell the difference between the evil Haman and the good Mordechai. On Yom Kippur, there is music of great power and sanctity, like Kol Nidre. On Purim, there is, oh, today we'll merry, merry be, and other silly songs. You know, if holidays were human beings, Yom Kippur would be Mother Teresa, and Purim would be Charlie Sheen. These holidays couldn't be any more different, and both still be Jewish. Yet oddly, the mystics saw in Purim a similarity to Yom Kippur. They noted that Yom Kippur, called in Hebrew Yom HaKippurim, can also be translated from the Hebrew as a day like Purim. And not only Kabbalists saw it this way, so did that noted anti-mystic, the Vilna Gaon. The reasoning of these great minds is certainly complex. As one rabbi wrote, we would assume Yom Kippur to be the greater of the 2 days, but in one sense, Purim is even greater. It's easier to achieve spiritual elevation on a day like Yom Kippur when we pray and have no time for forbidden activities like gossiping or getting angry. By fasting, the soul achieves dominance over the body. But on Purim, in our state of rambunctious drunkenness, it is much harder to maintain our human dignity. No kidding. As Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov wrote, if one attains holiness through affliction and another attains holiness through indulgence, who is the greater of the two? It may be said that the one who attains holiness through indulgence is greater, for the attainment of holiness through indulgence requires an infinitely greater degree of striving and effort. In this way, the challenge of Purim is greater. Literally translated, Yom HaKippurim is only a day like Purim will allow us to be truly holy. Okay, frankly, I don't buy it. To me, Purim is much more a reflection that people need humor and joy at least as much as they need serious introspection. Purim comes to teach us that even the Holy Blessed One likes a good party now and then. Like all the other springtime festivals, whether they're called Mardi Gras, Spring Fling, Carnival, or Rodeo, Purim is fun, a great way to usher in the end of winter with a wild, over-the-top, rambunctious celebration. Inhibitions are out and revelry, for one night and day at least, is in. It's as though we've been good for so long, we need to let down our hair, change our clothes, really celebrate. There's a 9-word summary of every Jewish festival from Hanukkah through Purim to Pesach. They tried to kill us, we won. Let's eat! On Purim we add, and drink. Pure, irresponsible fun, right? But there's also something more profound going on at Purim than just a good, unwholesome time. There's a famous joke that says on Purim we Jews dress up and pretend to be non-Jews, while on Yom Kippur we dress up and pretend to be Jews. Purim is here to remind us that Judaism, our own Judaism, your Judaism, can be, should be, enjoyable and meaningful. That being Jewish is a gift and a blessing and a rollicking good time. So, no matter how old or young you are, or if you have or don't have kids, come to Purim this year. It's on Sunday morning, March 20th, when my own congregation, Temple Emmanuel, here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, will unveil a spectacular parody of the musical The Book of Mormon called The Book of Esther, complete with songs, costumes, sets, and dance. And then Wednesday night, March 23rd, we chant the Megillah itself. Come to my Reform Synagogue, Temple Emmanuel, and have a fairly wholesome and extremely good time. Or you can go to an Orthodox one and party all night, as they tend to. And don't miss the great Purim carnivals either. To get us into the Purim mood, here's Paul Zim singing Misha Nichnas Adar. When we enter the month of Adar, the month of Purim, we magnify joy.
Misha, 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 Misha Nichnas Adar. Misha, 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 Misha Nichnas Adar.
Paul Zim's Misha Nichnas Adar for the month of Purim. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Rabbi Abraham Cooper, is the Associate Dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center and the Museum of Tolerance, a tireless worker for religious understanding around the world. He has represented Jews effectively and energetically in a variety of important settings everywhere. He's the recipient of the 2015 Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for service to the Jewish people. He'll be getting the award this Friday night, March 18th, at Temple Emmanuel. Meet him when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K-8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish Rabbi Abraham Cooper. He is the Associate Dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, perhaps one of the leading Jewish human rights organizations in the world. Rabbi Cooper is also the recipient of the 2015 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for service to the Jewish people in the area of education and unity. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
No, thanks very much, Rabbi, for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you. Tell us how you got involved originally in doing the kind of work you do in tolerance and in education.
Well, I grew up in New York City during the time of the Cold War and great changes in the U.S. with Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, civil rights movement. I grew up in the Soviet Jewry movement during the time when we had 3 million Jews trapped behind the Iron Curtain. And I was an activist. I went to the Soviet Union, had my education at Yeshiva University and in Israel. And when Rabbi Marvin Heyer invited me to join him to start the Simon Wiesenthal Center way back when in 1977, it was really a perfect fit because it allowed me to apply my commitment to Jewish activism and human rights in a very profound way and met Simon Wiesenthal, the great Nazi hunter, already in 1977, and that sort of helped launch what would become what we are today, I think a great teaching institution and unabashed Zionist, pro-Israel, human rights NGO. And I emphasize human rights because while our concerns are first for our own people, Mr. Wiesenthal taught us from the beginning that the commitment has to be much broader, and we're involved in many, many other issues, not just tolerance education. I'm also very involved in North Korean human rights issues and working with moderates wherever I can find them around the world in terms of interfaith work as well.
You have worked and gone to conferences, spoken with leaders in places not renowned for human rights, like Sudan and China.
Right.
Talk about that experience a little bit.
Well, Sudan was quite remarkable. I happen to have a close friend here, Mrs. Habiballah, a religious Muslim grandmother. And unbeknownst to me, someone was also related to the top leader in Sudan. And it was at a time before Darfur, where the negotiations going on. And make a long story short, I agreed to go to meet with the leaders and basically try to disinfect the situation with some truth. I found the people in Sudan to be very open and forthcoming. And it was an experience that I'm happy I can report about. Of course, China, I have a big interest in Asia and have for decades. We're the only Jewish human rights organization that's based on the Asia-Pacific Rim. I've been to Japan over 30 times, go to India, Indonesia, many, many countries there, because I think for the future of our people, in terms of bilateral relations, we look at great civilizations like China, where we're an ancient people and so are they. There's no history of anti-Semitism. India, same thing. Small Jewish presence there, but a respect for Judaism. No history of anti-Semitism. Great curiosity about Jews and Jewish values. So, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I'm a very lucky man because I get to look more globally at issues and opportunities to try to bring the positive message of what the Jewish people is all about, and also to try to, you know, act directly on behalf of endangered communities, unfortunately, right now, across Europe especially. But when we deal with issues of Internet terrorism and hate, we don't approach it just in terms of anti-Semitism. We deal with the full gamut of the attacks on minorities, African Americans, Latinos, people of color, LGBT, Islamophobia, you name it, whatever the reality is on the ground, however big or small the issue, this is part of a subculture of hate online. I started a project two decades ago called Digital Terrorism and Hate, before I even had a computer. I still don't understand the technology. I have to rely on younger people. But that is where the front lines today for the hearts and minds of young people is at. And I spend a lot of time dealing and meeting directly with companies in Silicon Valley, as well as people in the intelligence and policing communities on both sides of the Atlantic.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Abraham Cooper, the winner of the 2015 Cohen Memorial Foundation Award and the Associate Dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, when we come back in just a few moments here on Too Jewish. We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Cohen. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes: propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from FlavorArt in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You'll hear all past and present shows through the website or download our podcasts at the Apple iTunes Store. We have 8 months until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue our election year feature, the 2016 Too Jewish Presidential Report. As the Donald moves closer to securing the Republican nomination for president, many people are asking a classic question. Is he good for the Jews? Or more typically, will he be bad for the Jews? The answer is unclear. While Trump has a daughter who converted to Judaism and she and her family have an Orthodox Jewish lifestyle, Trump's supporters include a startling array of anti-Semites, right and left, white and black, and a whole lot of people who seem, well, just really, really angry. Trump himself is not an anti-Semite, but his inability to reject the support of David Duke and Louis Farrakhan reflects his general inability to reject anybody who supports him, no matter how heinous they are. This doesn't bode well. Trump did tell the Republican Jewish caucus, oh, not too long ago, that he didn't need their money, but believes he would be the best thing ever to happen to Israel. Then again, Trump generally believes he would be the best thing ever to happen to the whole world, so that should come as no surprise. It's rather difficult to determine how Trump would act if he were to win the presidency, of course. He has exactly no experience at any level of government. In surveys of Jewish voters, Trump polls at about the same level as all Republican candidates currently do, that is, the surviving ones, in the 20 to 30% range. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking about the sense that we have that Europe is, that many Jews have today, that Europe is deeply anti-Semitic or that it's an unsafe place for Jews now. Let's explore sort of why people feel that way, but also some of the origins of that anti-Semitic quality.
Well, there have been attacks, but I think people in our community don't look closely enough at who sponsors the attacks and how the governments in Europe respond to the attacks. And there has been the emergence of extreme right-wing parties, which many people in typical American shorthand describe as neo-Nazi parties, whereas in fact a lot of them have nothing to do with Nazi ideology per se. They're just far to the right. And sometimes nationalistic without necessarily having anti-Semitism as any part of their platform.
Although some, of course, do. Aryan Dawn, you know, there's certain parties in Greece and Austria that have identified with anti-Semitic themes.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm talking about major parties. Like, you started, I think, last week's show with a reference to the Labour Party in Britain. So
right.
Britain, essentially like us, is basically a two-party country. And most serious countries in Europe have two or three main parties and then a bunch of fringe parties that might get 1 or 2% of the vote. So you don't really worry about those things. At least I don't worry about those things. So I think it's important to remind your listeners that the large presence of Muslims, often underemployed, often young, often looking for outlets other than graffiti for their energy and creativity, is almost always, if you scratch beneath the surface, responsible for anti-Semitic incidents in Europe, particularly if they involve violence, particularly in the suburbs of Paris and elsewhere. It's not your French establishment Catholics who are mugging Jews on their way to work or setting fire to Jewish businesses or whatever. And the government reacts very strongly to protect its Jewish citizens. And Jews have had full citizenship rights in France since the time of Napoleon. They haven't been second-class citizens. They haven't been in a ghetto. They've been prime ministers. They've been foreign ministers. Laurent Fabius is Jewish. When Mitterrand was president, all of his kitchen cabinet was Jewish.
Right.
It's very safe to say that the French establishment, per se, is not only not anti-Semitic, if anything, they're pro-Semitic. They value deeply and sincerely the presence of a Jewish population in their country. To what extent that's true for other countries in Europe, I don't really know, except I think we can infer from the fact that anti-Semitism is a quite a recent phenomenon elsewhere in Northern Europe, that they also value the presence of their Jewish communities. The way the government responds, the governments, plural, respond to anti-Semitic incidents is similar to the way it responds in France. And the perpetrators of most of these incidents are the same. So I don't think it's fair to say that Europeans per se are becoming more anti-Semitic. I think it's fair to say that European countries are becoming more Islamicized, and particularly the population involved is radical young Muslims.
We will continue to explore this next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivinan, Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So we're in the month of Adar. This year there's 2 months of Adar because it's a leap year. And we say, Mishenichmas Adar Marbim B'Simcha. When you enter the month of Adar, you should multiply joy because Purim is coming. But in Israel, they don't have to do that. You have a very interesting UN study to tell us about.
Yeah, and of course you can trust UN studies, right?
Because the UN is so pro-Israel, of course.
Pro-Israel and not biased, yeah. But I brought this fact because it was published only by the UN. It's the researchers that show that Israelis are one of the happiest nation.
Israelis are one of the, and they're Jews.
And they're Israelis. And
impossible.
They live in the middle of the, you know,
the Middle East
of everything.
With civil war next to them in Syria.
The conflict,
and
the stabbing, the corruption, stabbing. The everything.
Everything.
And they're happy.
Expensive cottage cheese, everything that you could think about.
Yes. Yeah, so,
and yet they're one of the happiest nations. How
yes.
is that possible?
I don't know, but as an Israeli, I can tell you, and you know that I'm happy, right? Most
you
of
are.
The time.
Almost always.
That I think it's also a way to survive. Like when you live in a... that tension, and when you live in an sometime really not a normal situation, the only solution is to laugh about, you know, your own reality. You know, that's the only, and to be happy. And you know what? I think all the Israelis learned very, like, from the young age that life is really short. You know, everyone said it around the world, but I think Israeli really believe that life is very short. And you better take the most of it as, you know, as soon as you can. Don't wait to pension, to retire, do whatever you...
Have fun now.
Before army, before, you know, don't wait, like, don't plan for... That's why we're not planning anything. Like, we're doing now, everything.
Yeah,
it's
I remember,
like in 5
I know.
Minutes.
Oh, we're going to do a big event? Okay, we'll start tomorrow worrying about it. It'll be ready by Saturday, don't worry.
So
it's interesting because, of course, the perception is, you know, Israel in this crucible, in this difficult part of the world, threatened, endangered, everybody has to go in the army, you know, all of this. But that's not the reality of daily life. All those things are true.
And I think it's also, we talked like a few weeks ago,
yeah.
About the different perception. Like, so I think... people around the world, like, seeing Israel is very serious, maybe carry guns, very, you know, but we're not, like...
right.
Yeah, some of us carry gun only because they are serving at the IDF and or other reasons, but we are very happy. We really love the fact that we live in Israel, and we're happy with what we have. Like, I don't know. I don't have a lot of explanation. We're just
That's
happy.
Okay. You know, they say don't analyze a good feeling. So let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Ashrat. We'll
Toda
talk
rabbi.
Next week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of Tucson Hebrew Academy, Boker Or. We started talking about some theories of learning and needs last week. How do you apply Maslow's hierarchy of needs, Bloom's taxonomy, and even without those terms, how do you understand the needs of children at different ages? How does it change as they go from kindergarten through grade school to middle school and
Absolutely.
So on?
Great questions and so important to educational systems. You know, you don't have to have studied child psychology or teaching and learning to understand that all of us have kind of a rhythm and a flow to the way that we learn, and a list of priorities in terms of having our needs met every day. We all need to eat. We need to have a certain amount of rest, feel safe, have a sense of belonging and participation, inclusion. And these connect to Maslow. And also, after those basic components, there's the need to feel a certain sense of esteem and worth. And then on top of that pyramid is self-actualization. We talked a little bit last week about the primary grades and how they connect to these concepts. And so the same is true throughout the middle years and the upper years in schooling.
You know, I was thinking about the middle years. There was that movie Inside Out a year ago or so, and they talk like an 11-year-old, and she's changing and she moves, and they say, well, what could possibly go wrong when she hits age 12? And I'm thinking like, oh my goodness.
We never want to ask ourselves what could possibly go wrong. But yeah, as kids are coming up through the grades, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, their needs shift and change. And every child is different. So some children are developing quicker, some are moving at a slower rate. But it's important that we're always mindful of where individual kids are and where kids are as groups. So in the middle grades, there's hopefully already an established sense of belonging and security in your school environment. And so those things continue to be nurtured, but kids also start to develop some independence. In the lower grades, we have an expression that we are learning to read. And then as kids master the skills of reading, they start reading to learn. And so making sure that they're feeling good about their progress really helps them get to a point where they feel confident and hit that self-actualization. And it's also relevant to discuss Bloom's taxonomy here. We see kids who come in and have a certain level of knowledge, and then we build on that from there. This can apply to learning Hebrew and Jewish traditions and customs, or reading in English. And once a knowledge base is built, then they're able to move on in the hierarchy. And so as kids start to get older and they have a lot of fundamental concepts and vocabulary and skills under their belts, they're able to step in and apply their knowledge more and analyze what they're thinking about. And this kind of stuff gets really exciting in the upper grades, which we'll address next week.
Thanks very much, John. We will talk then. When we return on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
Temple Emmanuel, Pilgrimage Trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is set May 29th to June 9th, 2016. If you want to go on this fabulous journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, email tojewishradio18@gmail.com, TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com, or call 520-327-4501 for more information. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. The Shabbos service finishes and the congregation is invited to Kiddush in the temple hall. During the Kiddush, Mordechai goes over to Rabbi Bloom, shakes his hand and says, "Rabbi, you gave a good sermon today. You should have it published." "Why, thank you," says Rabbi Bloom. "But just between you and me, I'm planning to have all my sermons published posthumously." "That's good news," says Mordechai. "The sooner the better." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish Just For You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin the middle book of the Torah, Vayikra, or Leviticus. Vayikra presents an entirely new challenge to a first-time student of Torah. How do you find relevance in a portion that reflects religious practices that have been obsolete for almost 2,000 years? The rites of the sacrificial cult that flourished in the days of the tabernacle in the wilderness and the temple in Jerusalem have been replaced for nearly two millennia by prayer, study, and a variety of other religious actions, mitzvot. Vayikra is a how-to book, however, on korbanot, sacrifices. What can we take from a Torah portion replete with ways to slaughter animals, the proper division of their bodies to be placed on the altar, and the different categories of sacrifices so offered? One linguistic hint exists in the word for sacrifice, korban. The Hebrew root for sacrifice actually also means to bring near, karev, as in the Passover Haggadah text, karev yom, bring near the day. When we bring an animal to sacrifice, we are seeking to move close to God, not only to approach the power of divine acceptance, but also to come near God in every way. We may no longer choose to do this by actually giving up valuable possessions. Remember, livestock in those days were like SUVs in their economic meaning, let alone by killing something, but we can still seek to find powerful and humbling ways to bring ourselves closer to God and to holiness. When we pray with sincerity, meditate with meaning, and reach out to find the flow of holiness ever present in the world, we can discover the true essence of Vayikra. And then we, like our ancestors of old, may find that our sacrifice of time, energy, and attention will bring us to holiness, too. When we return on Too Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Abraham Cooper, the Associate Dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, who will be honored at my own Temple Emmanuel here in Tucson with a 2015 Rabbi Samuel S. and A.R. McCohan Award for Service to the Jewish People this coming Friday night, March 18th. Rabbi Cooper will discuss the importance of Southeast Asia to the future of the Jews and much more when we come back on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
Sixty influential Jewish Republicans have published an open letter condemning presidential candidate Donald Trump for statements he had made, which in their words, quotes, will make America less safe because of hateful anti-Muslim rhetoric that undermines the seriousness of combating Islamic radicalism. The letter also denounces Trump's contempt for neighbors such as Mexico and allies such as Japan, while admiring dictators like Russia's Vladimir Putin. Trump, they write, is feckless and dangerous. The signers include Michael Chertoff, who was Secretary of Homeland Security under President George W. Bush, Max Boot, Sr., foreign policy advisor to John McCain, and Dov Zakheim, Undersecretary of Defense in the Reagan administration. Objections to Mr. Trump have also been made by both the new and former heads of the Anti-Defamation League. Its current director, Jonathan Greenblatt, has criticized Trump's equation of Jewish federations with hate groups, labeling such comparisons appalling. His predecessor, Abraham Foxman, after watching Mr. Trump on television while campaigning in Orlando, Florida, and calling on those at a rally to raise their hands in his support, noted that as a Holocaust survivor, it reminded him of rallies in Nazi Germany under Adolf Hitler, where those present raised their hands in salute, shouting, Sieg Heil. He described the scene as an unmistakable fascist gesture, one more offensive, obnoxious, and disgusting than anything I thought I would ever witness in the United States. Finally, two Israel filmmakers are about to produce a remake of the 1974 cult classic motion picture Death Wish, which starred the late Charles Bronson as a seeming law-abiding architect who at night, disgusted with the inability of the police to bring criminals to justice, becomes a crusading vigilante who embarks upon a series of revenge killings after his wife and daughter have been murdered. The new version, which will star Bruce Willis, will begin filming in the summer. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Abraham Cooper, is the Associate Dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, leading Jewish human rights organization all around the world based in Los Angeles. He is also the winner of the 2015 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for his work on behalf of the Jewish people. When you and worked with Rabbi Heyer in developing the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the focus could easily have been on Wiesenthal's great work, Hunting Nazis. That's part of it, but that's only a really a, I would say, almost a small part of it. Can you explain how that evolved?
Well, very interesting. It goes back to the very first meeting Rabbi Heyer had with Simon Wiesenthal in Vienna, when he quoted King Solomon and said, I'm here. You know, a good name is more precious than oil. We're here to take your good name. And Mr. Wiesenthal's response was, well, you're going to build a museum that's very nice. If people will come there once or twice a year to remember and say Kaddish or Yahrzeit, beautiful. If that's what you have in mind, I'll give you a letter. If you want my name, I'm an activist. And if you're prepared to be activists, not only about yesterday's Nazis, but about today's Nazis and the threats from tomorrow, then you can have my name. So from the very beginning, I mean, he knew we would, of course, help him till the end of the chapter of Nazi war criminals would be closed. And my colleague Ephraim Zuroff in Israel is still amazingly working on active trials and cases, especially out of Germany today. And here we are in 2016. But the main work of the center, the Museum of Tolerance, is our educational arm. 95% of the over 5 million visitors since we opened in 1993 are not of the Jewish faith. We believe very much in mass communication. We have a film division, Mariah Films. Imagine being next door where your boss is not only a Talmudic scholar, but also has two Oscars in his office. So we produce documentaries. I'm very involved with an exhibition that has co-organized with UNESCO, not known to be particularly friendly to Israel.
Not at all, right?
But that deals with the 3,500-year relationship of the Jewish people with the Holy Land, and we managed to get their support. It's been already presented at the Knesset, understandably, but also at the Vatican, Capitol Hill, the United Nations headquarters in New York City, and we'll be taking it worldwide and hopefully also across the United States, especially on campuses. So for us, the main weapon is education, and the other part of it is that the main marketing tool that we all use, including right now as we speak, are these magnificent internet technologies that allow us to stay in close touch with loved ones, share our ideas and hopes and aspirations with people around the world. It destroys national borders, et cetera, et cetera. That's the good news. The bad news is that the evildoers, especially the terrorists like ISIS and Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab, understand these technologies even better than we do. And a lot of my work on a day-to-day basis is to lobby and encourage the Silicon Valley companies to degrade the capabilities of terrorists, extremists, and anti-Semites, as well as to work with law enforcement and intelligence groups to make sure that they are not only harvesting raw data, but they have an understanding of what the trends are and who needs to be looked at. That is, it's an overwhelming challenge. It reminds me of what Chazal said, "Lo alecha hamalacha ligmor, v'lo ata ben charin libadel mizeh," meaning that you can't finish everything, but neither can you shy away from the challenge. And I think that the internet opportunities and challenges, especially in social media, have already changed the younger generations for, I think, good and bad, but still represent too much of an opportunity for the people who want to destroy our civilization to market in very sophisticated ways to young people all over the globe, including in our communities here in North America.
I want to shift from the internet, although I expect we'll all be talking about internet hate for a long time, unfortunately, to a country I visited not too long ago, Indonesia. You know, I went there expecting a place filled with terrorism, worried about things, and I found it to be an amazing place. You've had some experience there.
I couldn't agree with you more. When I get off a plane in a place like Indonesia the first time, I wore a baseball cap. It's the largest Muslim country in the world. Didn't know what to expect.
Right.
Within about 20 minutes, I put my kippah on.
Yeah.
I felt that the overall attitude of people there was extraordinarily tolerant. I was very close to the late President Wahid, who was not only the president of the country for a while, but headed up a religious movement of 60 million religious Muslims,
right.
6-0. Right. And with his encouragement, we hosted a group of religious Muslim we say in Yiddish, balabatim, meaning professionals, people around hospitals. We had them for a week of Hanukkah in Israel, widely reported on back home.
Right.
It's an amazing place, but it's also a kind of front line because for a while there, the Iranians, and now, of course, Al-Qaeda, all the other extremist groups, push very hard to try to win over recruits, from Indonesia. But there is, at the core of this people, traditions of certainly of religious tolerance. There's significant Hindu presence there and other religions. And my hope is that in the long range, that will be a country that will maintain and maybe grow and become a model of tolerance in the region and beyond. What is interesting is that, culturally speaking, Indonesia is closest to Malaysia. And Malaysia, because of the horrible political leadership they've had, starting with Mahathir back in the 1980s already, have not only defined the majority, the political culture, as within Islam, which is fine, but have inserted extreme anti-Israel and anti-Semitic attitudes into that political culture, even though there are virtually no Jews there.
Yeah,
so it is interesting to watch these two important countries that share the same rock stars and art and
music and everything, right?
Very similar. The whole thing, and yet, on the other hand, when it comes to the Jewish people, there's going to be a lot of work, we hope, we find the right leaders there on the ground, you know, for us to work with in order to decouple what was really, you know, an outside concept of anti-Semitism that's been injected for a couple of decades now into that political culture. But overall, Asia is a fascinating and important place. And I would also say that, you know, in my travels, one of the countries that I've now, in recent years, gone back to a few times is Azerbaijan. That is a 95% Muslim country that is next door, listen to this neighborhood, to Iran and Russia. But has full diplomatic relations with Israel, and in terms of religious practice, this is a secular Muslim country that protects the religious rights of Jews. There's synagogues, there's a Jewish day school for Christians to have their churches, and so, you know, in the hunt to find people who have a different worldview but have similar core values of Menschlichkeit, I'm a lucky man. I've gotten to fly all over the world. And the good news that I can report to you is whatever the cultural differences, and they are profound, and the language barriers and all the rest, there are good people everywhere. And we need to redouble our efforts to find such people and to find common ground with them.
I want to thank Rabbi Abraham Cooper for a great visit here on Too Jewish. He will be speaking at services at Temple Emmanuel on March 18th here in Tucson. Give us the website. There are many actually associated with the Wiesenthal Center, but what's the best website for people to find out more?
I think the best place is just to go to Wiesenthal.com. That's Wiesenthal.com. And you can sign up for the e-blast. I think the most important thing also is that we live in a really wonderful time of history where individuals can make a difference. You know, if you see something online or if there's something going on in the community, you need to say something. When we talk about leadership in the Jewish world, it's really a matter of partnership. We've been told in the Bible that every Jew is a leader. And so working together with leaders that I've met before and with people who don't yet know that they are really true leaders has been a wonderful blessing in my life. And I look forward to visiting Tucson.
We look forward to having you. When we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470
888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us at Temple Emmanuel this Friday night, March 18th, to hear Rabbi Cooper, our guest this morning, as he receives the 2015 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award. And come back next Sunday to Too Jewish. Our guest will be New York Times columnist Ron Lieber, author of the new book, The Opposite of Spoiled, about how to raise kids who are responsible about money. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from the coming holiday of Purim, arriving at Temple Emmanuel with a great parody of the Book of Mormon called The Book of Esther next Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m., right after Too Jewish. Anyway, this is the Sephardic Purim song, Empesara Kontar, the story of Purim as told in a poem, a setting from the Jews of Sarajevo. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.